Hip-hop legend Tupac Shakur would have turned 46 years old last Friday. A new film called All Eyes on Me hit theaters this past weekend, celebrating his life. Tupac's mother, Afeni Shakur, was very active in Atlanta as she donated a collection of his works to the Atlanta University Center Woodruff Library. The archives include handwritten manuscripts, writings from his diary, song lyrics, and other personal items. With me now is hip-hop scholar Nsenga Burton. Nsenga, good to see you. Good
Thank
to have you
for
here.
Having me. Good to see you, too.
I have had the most wonderful conversations about Tupac, and I've got to admit this right off the top. I was Biggie. I was more Biggie than Tupac, right?
Yes.
Even though I'm a Baltimore kid, right? And Tupac spent time, you too?
10 years.
I
lived in Baltimore, yes.
Okay, so when you think about Tupac Shakur, what comes to mind?
It's funny that you say Baltimore, because that's actually the first thing I think about, because he really is iconic there for a lot of different reasons than he's iconic for the rest of the country and the world, I would argue. Tupac is remembered in Baltimore as being very much of a layered individual. You know, he went to the very prestigious and illustrious Baltimore School of Performing Arts, right? And so everybody knows that that's one of the toughest art schools to get into on the East Coast and probably in the country. And they're very selective. And so the fact that he actually went there, he was admitted there, and that he had to engage in there, not only creative curriculum, but also their academic curriculum.
Right.
People have a different kind of idea or way of seeing and thinking about Tupac in that from that perspective. But I think that his persona, you know, when he came out of prison, Clinton Correctional Facility, the persona that he adopted, because I never really believed that.
A persona that he adopted?
Yeah, I never believed that was Tupac. I mean, I just did not, based on all of the things I had known about him. I only met him once. I didn't have a real conversation with him. I was just in the same space with him.
So because this is a central question, the mystery of Tupac.
Well,
who he really was.
Well, and that's what this movie offers, right? And this is what this collection offers, right? So you have this movie, which is Benny Boom and, you know, a bunch of other folks, their perspectives of who Tupac is. Then you have the late, great Afeni Shakur, who's the mother of Tupac, also an intellectual, political activist and what have you, and her perspective of who her son is,
right?
The real Tupac. And so she has taken the time or took the time to, like, you know, carefully and methodically go through his materials for 2 years, in order to figure out how and what they want people to know about Tupac. Like, who is Tupac? And so out of this comes these letters.
But is it their vision of who Tupac was, or is it, can we think of it as the real version of Tupac? How are we to think about the materials?
Well, I think that because Afeni Shakur is his mother, and I'm a mother, right? So I feel like no one can tell me about my daughter other than me, right?
Good, bad, and otherwise.
Good, bad, and otherwise. Like, so all the stuff you're going to tell me about her, she's a baby, she's 19 months, but all the stuff you're going to tell me about her, even in daycare, I already know.
Yes.
No, but having said that, Afeni Shakur, you know, the mother-son bond is an important one. A lot of times people focus on the father-son bond, the mother-daughter bond. But the mother-son bond, especially in the Black community, when many of our households are led by Black women, is a very important bond that people share. And so in this particular collection, the fact that she actually took the time to go through his materials and include, you know, treatments for music videos. She has the notebooks that he wrote All Eyes on Me and Tupacalypse Now in. She included a card, you know, her last card to him on his 25th birthday. That she wrote to him that has, like, a, you know, just the sweetest note in it. So, you know, I think, you know, there are different versions of Tupac. There are many layers to his lives. But if you want to see, you know, who he was as a son, if you want to see who he was as an artist, if you want to see who he was as an icon and as a leader in the community, then you want to see this collection.
So, Nsenga, I want to play a clip from the movie. And it touches on some of the complications in that relationship.
Yeah.
Let's roll the clip and let's talk about it.
Okay.
Like all Black leaders, you have a bullseye on your back, and today it just got bigger.
But I ain't no Black leader. Not yet.
And how you not a Black leader? The vice president was just talking about you on the TV. Baby, you have to understand. With the Panthers, it wasn't that we had guns or Black leather. It was because of our message. We were transforming minds.
And look, Afeni was a member of the Panthers. You know, she and 21 other members of the Panthers stood trial in New York, accused of what we would call today domestic terrorism.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Did she see her son as a black leader? And did Tupac ever come to see himself as a black leader?
Yeah, I think the film actually does a great job of capturing that. I saw the film yesterday at the premiere in Atlanta, and it does do a great job of how she saw him relative to how he saw himself. I think it took time for him to realize that was his role, his inherited identity, right? So kids develop identities in line with their parents and separate from their parents, right? So when you're trying to figure out who you are and where you want to be in the world, it may be completely in line with your parents, and it may be completely oppositional to what your parents want you to be. And so, she absolutely thought that it was every black man and woman's responsibility to be some type of leader in the community, because our community was in such a state, particularly at the time period, if you're talking about the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, you know, you're going from post-industrial economics in most of the major cities. You're having uprisings. This is post-assassination of King. Yeah. This is, the post-industrial complex, jobs are starting to go overseas. You've got Reaganomics coming in. So all of this, and then the introduction of crack to African-American communities. And so you have all of these things happening that are really destroying our community. And so her idea was that we should all be leaders, right? This is the Black Panther moniker.
Yeah.
Taking responsibility for yourself, self-identity, self-determination. And she thought Tupac should do that. And as a man, and as brilliant as he was, he should be using his talents in that way.
Yeah. I want to play another clip from the movie. There's a bunch of sound that I want to get to as we talk about the life of Tupac Shakur. This is another clip for the movie.
The man I knew wanted to use his voice to educate, to bring people together.
If he coming at me, he gonna get dealt with.
So can nobody tell you nothing, huh?
Not about this.
If he's coming at me, he's gonna get dealt with. And that brings to mind the illusions of the phraseology, thug life.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about Tupac's embrace of thug life. It was tattooed on his belly.
Mm-hmm.
What did that mean for him?
Well, it was actually an acronym, and I think that he was trying to be subversive in using it, right? But what happened is that people weren't ready for that subversion, right? Part of how subversiveness works, or part of the way that being subversive works, is people have to be kind of in on the information that you are kind of deconstructing, right? And so because he's part of rap, because he's now on death row, people are immediately going to, he's embracing being a thug, a criminal, a hoodlum, a gangster, when really what he was doing was kind of highlighting the complexities again, right? Of, our identities. You know, there he is the intellectual. He does quote Shakespeare. He does do ballet. But he also, does rap. He does hip hop. And it's not separate necessarily. It all kind of lives together.
What do you criticize in Tupac's life?
I think Tupac... There's room for criticism with Tupac, of course. In his,
there's plenty of room for criticism with Tupac.
In his misogynistic lyrics, the way that he appeared to treat women. I think there's room for criticism in that he spent time in prison for sexual abuse. I think there's lots of room for critique about Tupac in a myriad of ways. You know, how he spent his money. And he was doing things to help the community kind of quietly. And it's kind of the way that Prince did, right? He was doing things that we didn't know about. So what we saw was all of this kind of, glamorization of excess. We saw a lot of that. So I think that there's room for criticism in terms of how he did use that platform. And the fact that he did have that intellectual piece, he had the activist piece. And even though it was part of, it's really part of his identity, the part that was most exposed was the kind of nefarious part.
Yeah.
And I think that he had more control over that. Like, he was smarter than that.
Yeah, I want to play a clip. This is from Tupac. We should hear his own voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is from an interview with BET.
I trip off because it happens out of nothing. It just goes, everybody just be screaming and acting. And I just trip. I get uncomfortable. And it's like similar to a deer being caught in the headlights. I just freeze, and I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should be what they want me to be, or if I should make them hate me so they can stop. Say something mean so they can just stop. But I'm just like caught in the middle of it, because, no one can do that. Police can't do that. They can't stand in front of all those people and control them with a gun and mace and all that. So me with just words, it's like a battle to find the right words to say at the right time.
So what is that clip say to you? It sounds like a bit of the complication and the conflict in his own life and in his own mind about how to present himself and the meaning of his message.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's very aware of the power of words. You can tell that in this clip. And he's very aware of how words can be used against you when the intention is different. Right. Yeah. So, you know, the basic communication model is not what you say or how you say it, it's how it's received. Right. That's just basic communication. And so I don't think he really had an academic knowledge of that, but he was experiencing that real world. Right. So with Thug Life, again, you know, most people are thinking, oh, he's glamorizing being a thug. But if you actually talk to him and sit down and have a conversation with him about it, you find out that he's actually deconstructing what it means and trying to throw light or shed light on the complexities that live within us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what's the relevance today? I'm thinking about people all over the state of Georgia who are listening to us right now and maybe asking themselves, what's the relevance of a Tupac? Why are we talking about, you know, guy who claimed thug life, right? What's the relevance of Tupac in his life and his message today, you think?
Well, he's going to be relevant forever because Tupac really, at a young age, people forget that he died at 25.
Yes.
So he had all of these accomplishments before he was the age of 25, right? But he's relevant because he speaks to what is happening to people in the streets. You know, that hasn't changed. The conditions, and we're seeing that, you know. And so I think Tupac is relevant in terms of his lyrics, some of the things that he talked about, whether it was social justice, police brutality, people taking control of themselves and determining where they want to be and who they want to be and how they want to get there, not being a slave to dominant ideologies about race or, I will add now, gender. Sexuality, but just not being a slave to what the dominant society of the ruling class says that you should be a slave to. So Tupac's always going to be relevant in that regard. And he's always going to be relevant, too, because, you know, he was a brilliant rapper. People forget that part about Tupac. He was absolutely brilliant. The whole Biggie Tupac thing, you know, there's Biggie, there's Tupac, and then there's everybody else. You know, it's true. Including Jay-Z, I know. Yes, and including the fabulous rappers you have in Atlanta.
Yes.
Love all of you guys, you know, all of you.
Right.
All of you are fabulous.
Oh, stop.
Biggie and Tupac, yes. And then there's everyone else.
And Zenka Burton is with us. She's a hip-hop scholar. I've got to ask you, what's on the essential, if you want to understand Tupac better through his music, give me three or four songs that are essentially Tupac.
The entire album, All Eyes on Me. Mm. The entire album.
His biggest seller.
The biggest seller.
Nine million copies or so.
Yes, every song on there. Brenda's Got a Baby, if you really want to know the kind of the different layers of Tupac. I think I Get Around, which is a party song. You know, what people don't understand about hip hop is that you don't have to live in different camps. Like in our minds, outsiders, we think that you have to be in a different camp. Your conscious rap, your party rap, your whatever. But most rappers live in all of those different worlds and their music reflects.
How did it get so out of hand? How did this East Coast, West Coast thing, this Biggie Tupac thing get so out of hand? Now both of them are gone.
Well, the academic in me thinks it was orchestrated by the media companies and the record companies.
Really?
Yes.
Give me a line or two on that. What's your argument there?
I think that media, and I'm a media scholar and a member of the media, right? So I say this
As someone who works within the system. Yeah, yeah.
But I think sometimes you can help or hurt a situation. And I think all of the headlines, when all of the back and forth, and I mean, you know, Tupac has one of the most vicious diss records in
history.
Hit him up. I mean, it's vicious. You know, it's just vicious. And it's probably one of the best diss records out of all diss records. But I think that you can either be helpful or harmful. And I think it did not help to have all of these major, because this is at the height of hip hop magazines, too. I mean, everybody from Rap Pages to Vibe to The Source.
The source.
I mean, this is the height of hip hop, you know, media. And so it does not help when you have these publications, including Rolling Stone, right, and the other iconic music publications really hyping up and talking about these things and feeding into the East Coast, West Coast, in addition to people who are, you know, young people. Hip-hop was a youth music, right? So you have people who are looking for their identities. They're looking for where they belong. And then you have gang culture that's running rampant in the country. Mm-hmm. Like, it just was not a good look. So I think that that's what happened. It was just a series of horrible incidents that came together at the same time and just led to the demise of two brilliant rappers.
And the significance, good, bad, indifferent, of Death Row Records, Suge Knight.
Yeah, I mean, Dre was on Death Row. You know, I mean, say what you will, but Death Row, I mean, they are definitively one of the most productive, creative, and successful rap music labels, I mean, you could say ever. And the talent that came out of Death Row. And so Suge was a lot of things, but he was also able to recognize talent.
Yeah.
And so,
but that record label was tied to kind of a gang culture, correct?
Yeah, but that's not the first time. That's not just hip hop.
That exactly.
The music industry is tied to crime.
But Tupac wasn't about gang life, was he? His life wasn't about the gangs.
Well, that's what that leads me back to what I started with when I said he was performing, right? Just like we have this political theater that we're watching in Congress now, same idea. I felt like Tupac was performing.
He assumed an identity?
He was performing that identity because he had to survive. You know, you have to remember he joined Death Row in order to get out of the Clinton Correctional Facility. He went to jail and saw what it was and was like, oh, I can't stay here. And no one else was able to afford or would bail him out.
Right.
And so Suge came and got him. And so he had to really adopt that identity because that was the brand persona of that company.
And Zynga, how do you remember him?
I remember Tupac as brilliant, political, talented, and thoughtful. If you look at this stuff in this collection, I'm telling you, it ends on June 30th. Please, 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 if you can, see this collection. You see so many different layers, and you realize just how brilliant he was and that he really made a decision. And that's what happens with artists in general. They have to decide who they want to be to the public.
Yeah.
He made a decision.
Nzenga, good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Nzenga Burton.
Thank you for having me.
Has been our guest. Yeah, real pleasure.
Yes.